Okay, yeah.
Hey, did you see the, do you have a watch? Do you have a watch? Okay, 1 month long. As soon as we get settled, we will proceed. And good morning to everyone. Yes, good morning. We have the committee fully represented here, as usual. We've got the Department for Public Service and Administration. We've got PCTA. We also have Palama. We got informed that at just after 10, the Department for Higher Education and Training will join us. They're on their way, and therefore we'll have a fully fledged representative or presenters for today's program. I therefore welcome all of you to the Public Service Commission Committee, and I would really want to indicate that we have a tight agenda, and therefore we will, while waiting for the Higher Education and Training Minister to join us, we will go through all the other issues that affect the program. I just want to quickly indicate that we do have apologies from Honorable Minister Baloyi, who will not be with us today. We do also have another apology from the Deputy Minister, Honorable Padeaki, who will not be here today. We also have an apology from Honorable Vikani. Oh, she's running late. Okay, because I'm seeing Honorable from Stalgrave, and then to me, it means they're back. I know that they've been deployed to Devon to do the committee work for GovTech, and welcome back. And then we also have the apology from Honorable Williams. We requested, Honorable Williams is also doing a task for the committee where he is, so we've actually requested him to represent us to a meeting with the Deputy Speaker with the SDIs. With the ISDs, institutions supporting democracy, the, you know, Chapter 9, the independent institutions. So the Deputy Minister is actually meeting them, and the committee would know high on our agenda we've been dealing with those issues, and therefore it was important to have the committee representation in the absence of me being unable to go there because we couldn't shift this committee meeting, as it's also important. I will just, after stating these apologies, I'm sure you will all agree with me that I can go through the agenda for the day today. Our agenda stands as the briefing by the Minister of Public Service and Administration and the Minister of Higher Education and Training on the status of the public sector education training authority. In this case, that is the PCTA. As you know now, there is an apology from the Minister for Public Service and Administration. It's therefore going to be the department doing the briefing instead of the minister or the deputy minister. The next item on the agenda, we've got a discussion on Public Administration Leadership and Management Academy, which is Palama. We're going to be discussing the status quo and the overall vision of Palama's role in the public service. That is our agenda. And I thought it's important to also just indicate part of the documentation that is in our position as we are seated here. We do have a normal routine of the notice for the meeting. We've got the PCTA presentation that is handed out. It's written road ahead. Of course, we'll notice there are so many presentations today. We've got a DPSA presentation. It's on the public service cater development program. That is towards the strategic framework. We've got Palama again presentation. It talks of further transformation, update outcomes on the Misty Hills planning session. It's another presentation, which is there. Then we've got a revised draft third term program edition of that is for our members of the 15th. So that I would really just want to hint some aspects there. Okay, that is part of the documentation. We've got more than that because we did get a presentation from the Minister for Higher Education and Training as well. I want to believe members do have it in their position as well. And then I'm sure there might be also other documentation that we received prior to this meeting that relates to this meeting. But just to quickly indicate that we were very fortunate on this third time. There haven't been a lot of disruption of our program due to Parliament changing its program. So it's been stable for a while. We will be meeting all those items that we have targeted for this term. With this time and with this agenda for today being very critical as part of our third term. But, you know, from the side of the members, the committee members, honourable members, you will have noticed that largely from our third term, there's quite a lot that comes up that needs further focus, you know, further focus on it. For an example, the issue of the collaboration of institutions, it's a major issue. The issue of, you know, from the meeting that we had, a joint sitting with NCOP and National Assembly, we did realize how much our research is wanting within all the legislatures in the country. So those are the issues that have to be amplified. We need to further talk about them. We believe that the speakers, because we're part of the meeting, will continue in the speakers forum to talk about them. The secretaries in the SALSA forums to continue to talk about them. We need to inspire them because it's part of the collaboration of institutions to make sure that whatever they do, it must impact in terms of the work of this committee, because we are faced with a mammoth task of overseeing the departments that are well-resourced, and therefore we don't want to be seen wanting, but we really want to in a position to be enabled to do our work sufficiently as we actually try our best all the time. So with all that, I would really want to then highlight that in terms of our agenda, how we're going to proceed, we'll stick to it, but to make sure, because there is PCTA and there is the department, I was made aware that the department is going to do the presentation of the PCTA, and then I will allow the department to just give us a position of where they are, and would then have the minister, when he joins us, to take us through as well with the PCTA, role within the new establishment. And then thereafter, we can, perhaps we would always have this discussion between the presentations. We will discuss this matter, then have the minister discuss. Then we'll have Palama. I need to indicate to Palama, the Department of Higher Education and Training, I was very pleased that Palama will be part of this meeting, because it appears that we never had enough time to interact sufficiently, higher education and training together with Palama. And they thought also this meeting provides that basis to start having discussions. And I remember very well when we had an oversight visit, part of what Palama indicated to us is that they're soliciting stakeholders that they're going to work with the belief that higher education is one of them. We are looking forward, as ever, to a fruitful program and output for today. I will then, if there's nothing and members want to raise, I will then request the department to proceed with the presentation on the report on PCTA. Department, are you ready?
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, honourable members. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Madam Chair, you're absolutely correct in terms of the preparation of this presentation.
Okay, there's a problem about audibility. Is the speaker on?
Yeah. Okay, I need to speak up louder. Okay, no, my apologies. Just to indicate that, yes, we did speak to higher education and we spoke to PCTA in terms of preparing for this presentation. So the department presentation is comprehensive, that covers all of those areas. and PC Cut CEO and the CFO are present today, so I'm sure they'll be able to deal with specific questions that may arise. But in the presentation, I will cover those areas as well. My presentation this morning, Madam Chair, as well as honorable members, I'm going to look at the background, so I'm going to give a little bit of the history of PCETA, where we're coming from and where we find ourselves today, covering the scope of PCETA as well as the role clarification between PCETA, PALAMA, and DPSA. What are the differences in terms of the relationship between the three and the specific responsibilities? A little bit of the PCETA financials, and we're going to look at the DPSA-PCETA relationship, in particular the memorandum of understanding between the two parties, and then the way forward. In terms of the establishment, as part of the background of PCETA, PCETA was established in March of 2000 by the Minister of Labour in terms of the Skills Development Act 1998. In 2001, Cabinet took a decision not to establish PCETA as a standalone CETA in terms of all the other CETAs that were in place at that stage. In 2001, Cabinet took a decision that PCETA to be a distinct unit within DPSA. It was established as a chief directorate within DPSA. Its administration to be funded from DPSA budget, so funds were allocated as part of DPSA vote to fund the program itself, and DPSA to provide secretarial services to the PCETA. PCETA was then listed under the Public Finance Management Act in February of 2001, and because of this Cabinet decision in terms of the specific or distinct unit within DPSA, it was immediately delisted in November of 2001. You can't have it listed as the PFMA and as well as run as a distinct unit within DPSA. The reason we're raising the fact that it was listed again in April of 2006, the intention was to then create it as a standalone distinct unit thereafter. The Skills Development Act and the PCETA's constitution require the PCETA be constituted and functions as a separate legal entity, and that was the decision taken in April of 2006. Following listing of PCETA as public entity in 2006, DPSA staff that worked at PCETA on a secondment basis. Remember, from 2000 to 2006, all of those employees that we appointed into DPSA to perform the function of PCETA were then seconded to the PCETA to continue with that function in terms of the public entity. The current certificate of establishment lapses on the 31st of March 2011, and I think that's an important point because all of the work that is being done now in relation to PCETA will be finalized with effect 31st March. So even the appointment of an administrator that the Minister of Higher Education will be speaking to, that administrator is appointed for 6 months. Once we have absolute certainty on the CETA landscape going forward with effect from 1 April 2011. I thought it was important for us also just to clarify the scope of PCETA. The scope of PCETA is all government departments and provincial administration, but in particular for transverse skills. So it does not cover, for example, all educators, or it does not cover all your health workers, or your safety and security employees within the public service. It's all those transverse skills, financial management, human resource management, that type of thing within the public service. Most national departments are covered for all areas of skills. For example, your Department of Home Affairs, all of their skills requirements fall within the scope of PCETA. And then there's a specific clause in terms of the scope of PCETA. It's all those parastatals that are not covered by any other CETA then fall within the area of the PCETA. Approximately 12 of them are there at the moment. Moving on to the role clarification in terms of the relationships, I think it's important, this is just for information and background, Madam Chair, I thought it was important to clarify some of these things. The main function of the PCETA, starting with the PCETA, is to develop and implement sector skills plans by establishing learnerships within framework of the National Skills Development Strategy and the Human Resource Development Strategy framework for the public service. And this is the functions as defined in the Skills Development Act, and it applies to all CETA, not only to PCETA. So the establishment of the learnerships is also the accreditation of those learnerships, the quality assurance of those learnerships, the registering of those learnerships. So it's all of those functions in relation to the learnerships. It's to approve the workplace skills plans and to monitor implementation in this regard. establish learnerships and skills programs, and register learnership agreements if required. They're also responsible for the accreditation of training providers and training for compliance with the National Qualification Framework, a very specific role in terms of the accreditation of trainers and the training material in relation to them. And finally, they're responsible for the allocation of grants to employers, providers, and employees. And this is, as I indicated, defined in terms of Section 10 of the Skills Development Act. Then if we look at the role clarification in relation to PALAMA, PALAMA's responsibility, they must provide training and conduct examinations and tests for public service as DG PALAMA determines with the approval of the Minister for Public Service and Administration or as determined in regulations as requirement for appointment transfer. And Madam Chair and members, you'll remember in my previous presentation when we spoke about compulsory and mandatory training for public servants, this is where it fits in. We want to clearly put in place compulsory training for progression to a higher level, and there's a clear relationship between the two. PALAMA may also issue diplomas or certificates to person who passes examination, and this is covered in terms of Section 4 of the Public Service Act. So looking at PCETA and PALAMA, PCETA does the accreditation of the trainers and the training material, the learnership programs in other words. PALAMA then is responsible for the provision of those training, either through two ways, doing the training themselves or accrediting trainers that are accredited by the CETAs to do that training, and to ensure that that training is the appropriate standard that meets government's norms and standards, and that's going to be their chief responsibility. Then finally, what is the role of DPSA in this triangle arrangement? The Minister for Public Service and Administration, in terms of the Public Service Act, must set national norms and standards for public service on training and development. And this can be in the form of regulations, determinations, or directives. And one of the things we're going to look at there as part of the MPSA setting national norms and standards is the minimum requirements in terms of compulsory training for promotion purposes and so on. So that's where we'll come to the fore in terms of DPSA. Now, Madam Chair, what we've done thereafter is broken up each of the areas, the various functional areas, for example, around the learnerships, the learning programs itself. DPSA, as indicated, will be responsible for setting norms and standards, providing policies, the guidelines. We'll also be responsible for the monitoring and evaluation and ensure that we meet the targets in relation to learnerships. Now, those targets are set in terms of the provisions of the Skills Development Act, I think it's Sections 18.1 and 18.2, specific learners that we talk about. PCETA, as part of the learnership, will be responsible for the accreditation and quality assurance to establish learning programs, register agreements, and then monitor provisions. By registering agreements, we provide that ACETA doesn't have to quality assure and register all of the training programs themselves. They can sign MOUs with different CETAs that have the training program. A good example, Services CETA may have a number of training programs on financial management. The public service, or the PCETA, can sign an MOU with Services CETA to use the same module in terms of financial management. And this is where PALAMA comes to the fore, then accredits or uses those accredited training providers to provide that training. But they will then modify that training to make it public service specific. And that's the arrangement in terms of how we take it forward. Madam Chair, with your permission, I'm not going to go through all of this. I think they're self-explanatory in terms of the explanation. Then the next area I want to discuss quickly is the transfer of administration of Skills Development Act, and I think that was part of the exercise around the macro organization of the state. The President transferred administration of CETA-related provisions of the Skills Development Act, the SDA, from Minister of Labor to Minister of Higher Education and Training. Therefore, the Minister of Higher Education and Training is responsible, with effect from 1 November 2009, for all CETAs. So the CETAs now fall within his environment. That particular exercise is now completed. Staff have been transferred from labor into higher education, and the function is now being taken forward by the Minister of Higher Education and Training. The Minister and Department of Higher Education and Training now tasked with ensuring that all CETAs, including PCETA, complies with the Skills Development Act.
And I just have a quick interruption. So this PCETA now reports to the Minister of Higher Education and Training?
Correct.
Yes.
Following up on the transfer of administration, the transfer of the Skills Development Act to the Minister of Higher Education and Training did not change the relationship between PCETA and DPSA, and I'll explain that relationship. And that relationship is specific in relation to the operational budget for PCETA, and that's still included in the DPSA budget as transfer payment. But the functioning of the PCETA reports to the Minister of Higher Education and Training. We're just responsible for the funding in terms of transfer payment. MPSA, in terms of the PCETA constitution, is also responsible for the appointment of the 8 members on the PCETA board, representing the state as employer and one expert. So in other words, DPSA, or the Minister for Public Service and Administration, is seen as the employer component within that CETA as such, like all the other CETAs. Very briefly on PCETA's financial reports, and I think this is important because it's an area of concern to a number of us at the moment. Before 2009, PCETA did not have properly documented financial history because, simple principle, they were part of DPSA books, the Public Service and Administration. No properly constructed accounting and recording systems to effectively give account of the PCETA's history. At the end of 2008-2009 year, environment was characterized by poor record keeping, absence of key documentation, and practically no accounting or recording systems. The same conclusion was reached and reported by the Auditor General in 2007-08 as well as 2008-09 report. The situation resulted in the Auditor General giving blanket disclaimer on PCETA's financial records. Before 2007-2008 financial year, PCETA had only been subjected to external audit in 2000 and 2001 financial year. Therefore, no independent review of PCETA's operations for 6 years, factor which contributed to deterioration in management, accounting, reporting, monitoring, and review of systems at PCETA. Just giving a bit of the financial background history in terms of why we find ourselves, where we find ourselves. From November 2009, concerted efforts were put in place to reconstruct PCETA's financial records, and this was completed in March 2010. So we're back on track. This involved tracing all PCETA transactions, identifying purpose and source relevant and supporting documentation from its inception in 2000. This resulted in financial statements containing balances with proper audit trail going forward. Financial statements for 2009-10 prepared based on the reconstructed information that was put together resulted in a much improved audit report for 2009-10 as we stand today.
The honourable member wants to know, is the report being tabled? Do you want to answer that? Or?
Can we note that question? I think the best person to deal with that would be the CEO of PCETA. Further progress in this regard, the auditors appointed in March 2010 and the review of 2009-10 was conducted by the AG's Auditor General. The audit committee was appointed in January of 2010. Financial policies and procedures developed and approved by the PCETA board. And they are currently being reviewed with DPSA's assistance to ensure they meet the required standards. Other operational policies were developed and approval and declaration of interests as well as discretionary grant policies. All of these policies are being now developed and are in the process of being approved and finalized. Further progress in relation to the PCETA financial report, the risk assessment exercise commenced in May of 2010 and the register and report developed for approval. A recording and accounting system has been procured. Unfortunately, during the history of PCETA, we also had an incident of fraud, which set the PCETA back as well, and that work is ongoing to try and finalize the issue. PCETA was a victim to fraud by one of its financial managers in 2005. The bulk of the fraud occurred on the National Skills Fund. That was the money we received from the Department of Labor at that stage to fund the learnership program within the public service. The Special Investigative Unit, as well as the South African Police Service's investigation, resulted in the conviction of the former manager. By the way, he's in jail at the moment, so he's been convicted and sentenced. The final PwC forensic report, Madam Chair, because of that fraud, we had to do a comprehensive reconstruction of the account, and we had to do a complete forensic report of the account to ensure that there's appropriate records and balances. We appointed the PwC, PricewaterhouseCoopers, to conduct that forensic report. The report was issued in July of 2010. The report confirmed that at least $1.4 million was defrauded by the former finance minister, and that was the finance manager. You see, I've been talking about ministers recently. My apologies. By the former finance manager, Max Munyai. In addition, they've also picked up a potential of 10.8 million and unaccounted for, and that work is ongoing in terms of reconciliation. In that regard, I think we need to note it's not an issue of fraud, possibly part of it, but the key issue there is the reconciliation between the bank accounts of the learners and the payments that were made, and that's quite an extensive work in terms of doing that. So that's the work that's still ongoing. PCETA and the DPSA Memorandum of Understanding as a way forward. We're looking at towards the effective functioning of PCETA and facilitating PCETA's independence. In other words, we want PCETA away from DPSA, operating autonomously, operating independently, and reporting directly to the Minister of Higher Education and Training. That's the route we're looking at, and the MOU takes us along that path. We believe with effect from 1 April next year, that will be finalized, and they will be totally on their own. In this regard, to facilitate the movement of funds between ourselves and to facilitate the staff issues, we signed a memorandum of understanding, and that became effective on the 20th of March 2010, and it was updated on the 19th of August 2010 as part of that process. What does the MOU deal with? It deals with the transfer of funds, the movement of funds between DPSA and the PCETA. It deals with the staff issues, as well as the work tools, example, the furniture, the laptop, et cetera, to PCETA. As part of the MOU and as part of the transfer of the function, all furniture, equipment that were used by PCETA has now been transferred to PCETA. So it becomes the property of PCETA. The DPSA staff have been seconded to PCETA, and they will have a choice whether to remain as DPSA employees or to transfer to PCETA once we have clarity on PCETA's future. And that future will be determined come 1 April 2011 going forward. The corporate management and administrative support to PCETA by DPSA. In other words, we still process and pay out all of the decisions made by the PCETA in relation to procurement and staff matters and HR matters. We're responsible for monitoring the implementation of the MOU, and that is taking place through regular standing meetings between the PCETA and DPSA. PCETA and DPSA have regular meetings with the Accountant General's Office to assist PCETA to establish required financials and management and internal control systems to deal with any audit queries that may come up, but also to ensure that they are independent and standalone in terms of financial matters. As indicated, the CEO and the CFO positions have been filled, and they've both taken office, one on the 1st of August and the other on the 15th of August 2010. So they're relatively new in their positions. Support staff is currently being recruited, and staff complement grown from 15 in 2009 to 26 as we currently stand. A number of those staff are appointed on contract, pending the finalization of the landscape of the PCETA going forward. The new staff was appointed by PCETA, not by DPSA. We're making that point clear because in terms of the secondment arrangements. As indicated, we did speak to higher education and very briefly on some of the issues I'm sure the Minister of Higher Education will touch on. The placement of PCETA under administration. In August 2010, the Minister of Higher Education and Training indicated that he intends to proceed with placing PCETA under administration, and that the DG Higher Education and Training will shortly appoint the administrator. That decision has been taken. He's now determined that PCETA is under administration, and the DG Higher Education is in the process of finalizing the gazette to give effect to that decision. the administrator will take over functions of the board. I think that's an important principle. The administrator is not responsible for the day-to-day functioning of the PC. He or she will be responsible for the governance. So he replaces the board going forward. The administration and the staff and the function of the PC will still continue. To determine the way forward and to assist us in finalizing these issues, the Minister for Higher Education and Training has written to the Minister for Public Service and Administration and the need for us to establish a joint task team. And the task team regarding PCETA has been set up, involving DPSA, Department of Higher Education and Training, and National Treasury. And they're going to look at two key areas, the role of PCETA vis-a-vis other role players. And the other role players are PALAMA, service providers, a whole range of other role players that we need to look at there, also in relation to DPSA. Also collaboration between Department of Higher Education and Training and DPSA to strengthen skills development and HR development across public service. We're looking at a very close working arrangement there. The task team that has been set up consists of four officials, each from Department of Higher Education and Training and DPSA, four from either side, and two from National Treasury. In fact, in our discussions, we believe the DPSA officials will have to include PALAMA as well as part of those engagements. We've also agreed at some stage that there needs to be a range, once those decisions or recommendations are made from the joint task team, to have a number of consultative meetings. The consultative meetings will include PALAMA. The consultative meetings must include trade unions, labor, because they're no longer part of the board, so we need to engage with labor and their views on these issues. And we need to engage with National Treasury around the funding issues going forward and what does it mean. So there's a range of work that needs to be done. The work of the task team to feed into the CETA reaccreditation process to be completed by the end of September. I think that's the critical work that we need to do. Remember, the National Skills Authority will be meeting in around October to finalize their position in relation to the CETA environment in total, and PCETA falls part of that CETA environment. And they thereafter make a recommendation to the Minister of Higher Education and Training, and that gazetting or determination will be finalized early next year for implementation with effect from 1 April 2011 for the next 5 years. So this is the work in preparation for that process. Speaking a little bit about the training budget of national and provincial departments and public entities, national and provincial departments must budget for at least 1% of its payroll for training and education of its employees. It's interesting the way it's written in relation to the contribution. For all other employers, they must contribute to a CETA. It's in relation to PCETA and all other government CETAs, it may contribute funds to a CETA. Yeah. Maybe I should explain that as we go. The may in terms of CETAs for government entities is because departments were then contributing 10% of the 1% for the administration of those CETAs. So in relation to ETDP CETA as an example, Department of Education, provincial and national departments contribute 10% of that 1% for the administration and functioning of the ETDP CETA. By the way, that amounts to close to 100 million rands a year. So it's quite a substantial amount. The total personnel budget in education is close to close to 100 million rands. So it's that percentage that's used to fund the functioning of it. Just to indicate, although there is a may there, Cabinet took a decision in 2001 that departments must contribute 10% of the 1%. So Cabinet corrected the may. And the only other deviation from that is Cabinet took a decision to fund PCETA through DPSA. So the monies came into DPSA for PCETA. That was the slight deviation. The National Provincial Department does not pay skills levy in terms of the Skills Development Levy Act. That's where the employees contribute through SARS. The money goes through to the departments. Through to the CETAs. The same applies to national, provincial, public entities if 80% or more of the expenditure is defrayed directly or indirectly from funds voted by Parliament. PCETA budget allocations from the national skills funds not transferred via DPSA to PCTA, but directly to PCTA's bank account, opened for this purpose. That was the understanding, and that was the agreement between Department of Labor, the National Skills Fund, and PCTA and DPSA at that stage. They were given, I think, in 2004, I think it was 2003, 2004, the National Skills Fund allocated 106 million rands to PCTA to fund learnerships in the public service. And those funds were given on a quarterly basis directly to the PCTA, and they had to report for it on a quarterly basis. Operational and administrative budget for PCTA provided for via transfer payments on DPSA's budget port. I've made that point already, Madam Chair. The transfer payments from DPSA budget to PCTA is conditional on written assurance that it implements effective, efficient, and transparent financial management and internal control system. And that is a requirement in terms of the PFMA that the accounting officer needs to meet at DPSA before funds are transferred. And that's the work we're currently doing with PCTA to ensure that they have systems in place, they have proper controls in place, and they have the policies and practices to govern the funds that are transferred. The 2009-10 budget, we've made no transfer payment to PCTA to date. As I indicated, they're still in the process of finalizing their systems and their policies. National Treasury approved the transfer amount be reclassified. In other words, they became part of the DPSA budget. However, during the financial year, amount was ring-fenced and used for PCTA operational expenditure, including remuneration of DPSA staff seconded to PCTA. Of transfer amount of 21.84 million rands, an amount of 21.001 million was spent in 2009-10. In other words, 96.1% of the budget was spent by PCTA. That's PCTA money. With regard to 2010-11, the transfer amount for PCTA is 19.993 million. And as I indicated, once PCTA provides the written assurances, DPSA will transfer funds on quarterly basis based on projections. That's the requirement in terms of the PFMA going forward. Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members.
Thanks so much for that detailed presentation. And, we have a background and a history with PCTA as a committee, and there's been engagement. And I want to believe that part of issues had been raised and clarified. I'm going to allow the honourable members, I realise that, we are so eager to engage with this presentation, of course, for reasons that PCTA had been a thorny issue for the committee. I'm allowing interaction with the presentation in the form of questions or any discussions that members want to do, and I'll see that by a show of hands. Honourable Reyes, first one. Is there anyone else? Honourable Vigani will follow. Honourable Treya.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for this opportunity. And certainly I welcome this report and this presentation. It was high time that we got that you took this committee into your confidence and gave us a thorough briefing on what was happening at PCTA. Unfortunately, PCTA has been in the news for years and years, but for all the wrong reasons. And it was actually quite shameful to keep on reading year after year about how terrible they were doing. It seems that this, well, under administration, that's good. It's been moved away from DPSA to higher education like all the other CETAs. That's also a good development. And I'm also particularly pleased to hear that the previous finance manager has actually been charged. He had a hearing and he's been found guilty and he's now serving his time in jail. That's where he belongs. But I have a further question. He was not acting on his own. Usually there are more than one people. I want to know how many others have been investigated and what was the process and the result of that process. I'm sure he was not acting alone. Are there some others keeping him company in jail? And who are they? That's the first question. And then this 1.4 million, you say at least, it could be more. Part that he's sitting in jail, where he belongs, we also want to see if we can reclaim some of that money. What happened to this money and can we get it back? So that's my other question. What process, what steps have been taken to reclaim this money? That's all for now, Madam Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Treya. Honourable Vigani.
Thank you, Chair. My apologies for being late. I tried to make myself clever and I said I'll come this morning. And there was a bit of accident. Chairperson, what I'd like to know is the issue on PCTA being under the Finance Management Act, because I see they say they are listed back again in April 2006. Does that mean that all the CTAs will fall under that act and become, in a way, an entity of Treasury? Or is it particularly because PCTA is under administration? Then the relationship of PCTA and Palama. I might be out of order. I've heard something might have been said. But I'd like to know what developments are there or a plan of action is there in DPSA to ensure the strength of that relationship between yourselves. And also to perhaps the aim is for you that you are working towards recognizing Palama perhaps as your central body for public service training. What developments are there or what plans are in the pipeline in relation to that? Honorable Dre, I'm also as excited as you are that somebody was locked in jail. But I think we need to also look at possibilities of where the flaws were or the grey areas were. DPSA having been involved or having been part of public services CTA, what I'm interested in knowing is what the negative effects to this, how did it affect the training of public servants? And in the process of it affecting the public servants, perhaps if we just give a summary of what the backlogs became, because one of our key complaints is the issue of capacity, and obviously this must have been a setback. And in the process, in terms of what DPSA should have been monitoring at the time, what mistakes did you identify that you had made? Because obviously there must have been something going wrong, that this guy was only identified most probably after an Auditor General's report, for example. What are the grey areas? I'm interested in knowing the strength of the legislation in relation of us perhaps looking at an area for improvement. I hope that's heard. The other question, okay, I've asked the Palama one. Now, okay, you already explained the issue of the term that 1% may be paid. What exactly is that legislation then saying in relation to, it will most probably be the Skills Development Act, isn't it? What is it? The Levy Act, yeah. What clause is that? Because if you are able to say they may pay a 1%, there's a flaw somewhere in that clause. And if it could, just a brief explanation of this, where that stands in terms of us possibly looking into that being corrected, because if it's going to be compulsory for some to pay the 1%, and yet there are others elsewhere. I know, for example, in local government, it's compulsory for them to pay it. So I'm surprised that perhaps in the public service, it was an option. What's the clause in relation to that saying so that can be corrected or reviewed? Then, I'd like to know the plans. Perhaps that will also come up if we are going to have something from Palama's side. The relationship and the augmentations that need to be made in relation between government entities, particularly between the PCTA, Palama, DPSA, are there any legislative augmentations that also need to be made that we can perhaps become aware of? Because we might find that we are looking at this issue of the working towards an integrated public service, and there might be areas that might omit in terms of improving the training in public service. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's it, Chair, for now. Thanks.
Thanks, Honorable Bikani. Just to emphasize that we still have the presentation that will come by the Minister for Higher Education and Training. Yeah, but it says, I think all issues that you have raised can be captured quite correctly by the acting DG. Can I then proceed, because I've seen other members since. I've seen Honorable Manulega's hand up, and you'll be followed by Honorable Suka. Honorable Manulega.
Thank you, Chair. I want to get clarity on the issue of MOU, where they say DPSA staff that were seconded to PC, that they have choice to remain to DPSA and to go to PC. So I want to check with DPSA that they have space for them to remain. And then the other part is, I know that they may have people to replace them. For now, where they belong, they have a gap for them, because now they are seconded to PC. So I want clarity on that part. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Mandela. Honorable Suka, I'm sure you're last.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to appreciate this presentation, because it does give us some direction to and trying to reconstruct something that has been not there for quite some time. And I just imagine the anxiety of staff members who have been seconded for quite some time. To date, from 2006 to date, it has not yet been finalized. Surely your target would be by the next financial year to settle the matter, or what is it? Because you make a statement that you are dealing with the issue, but the output or the outcome of that, when would that, because you can't continue as if it's normal for those workers, because surely one way or another, they will be adversely affected, I assume. So I want just your target date. Then the second literature testing. On page 8 and 9, I know you did not go into detail making those statements, but my little concern is the output of that, your graphs, the output thereof, in terms of you've got your function to get APC to Palama, but the output does not give me a clear as to your achievable in terms of that, so that we can benchmark you at the end of the financial year. That's a concern. Maybe it's a document, it's work in progress, if I can get that in that regard. And then if you go to page 16, it's more of clarity questions as of now, because we are trying to reconstruct this, and I appreciate the progress. Can you just explain or elaborate a little bit on page 16, the last bullet, when you say the among the financial remedial steps that you are taking in terms of the recording and accounting system procured. Now, once you talk about the procurement or procured, what does that mean in real terms? Can I just get that? Maybe I would want to have a further question if I can be clarified on that matter. I wouldn't want to jump the gun before that. Then the last one, Chairperson. On page 17, also your last bullet point, the potential of 10.8 million, that is unaccounted for, and it has been reported. Surely this case has been coming for quite some time also. Your winding up of this case, or to what extent, or by when would we see the finalization? Because as you are moving, trying to put up your systems and everything else, you can't carry baggage from one financial year to another financial year. When do you think we might wrap up this case, this investigation? Because it's not 100 million, but we're talking of 10 million. It's a huge amount, but at least we should be saying by this time, at least the investigators, we are hoping to finalize and conclude this matter so that it goes to the courts of this country. In terms of time frames, what... So I'm saying, Chairperson, those are my few questions. Otherwise, I appreciate that they pick up the challenges, but also they put in place a turnaround strategy in what they are trying to do. Thank you.
Are there follow-up questions? Okay, I think I will take them. Let me start with Honorable Mohani.
I have this small question. My question is on, I've heard somewhere here, I've just lost the page, on the resulted in much improved audit report. How much is improved audit report? What is that report that is said to be improved? And also amongst the, still on the issue of the staff, the DPSA staff, because I think you said some are still with the SIU, Special Investigations Unit, not necessarily the staff, but this 10.1 million. How are we sure that that some of that staff that we might want PCTA might remain with are not involved in fraudulent issues? Are the staff that are in PCTA now, all of them clean? Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Honorable Mohani. Honorable Dreyer, you want to add?
Madam Chair, just a quickie. That final PricewaterhouseCoopers forensic report was issued on 1st July 2010. Can you let us have copies by the end of this week, please? We've been asking for a long time. Last year, again earlier this year, and then it was still under investigation. It wasn't complete. I couldn't see it. It's now finished. Someone is sitting in jail. Can we please have a copy of this report by the end of this week in our pigeonhole?
I think on issues like this, you see, when the matter has been raised in Parliament, Public Safety and Administration, together with PCTA, it's not right for members to continuously ask over and over. In fact, the first thing that you're supposed to do was to appropriately respond that, we don't have the copy, but this is the situation, or to say this is the copy. I think it's not correct to continuously raise one question. Okay, I can see the higher education and training is arriving, but can we then respond in the meantime before we actually have a quick break and have them in our midst? DG, proceed with the responses.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Honourable Members, for those questions. As indicated, I've got both the legal department of DPSA as well as the CFO present, as well as the CEO from PCTA. So I'm going to delegate some of these questions to them. I think the question dealing with the audit report, the question dealing with the accounting systems that has been procured, as well as the 10.8 million as part of the PCTA involvement and so on, as well as the audit report in terms of the much improved and to what extent, I'll leave that to the CEO of PCTA to deal with. And I think MP Van Schoor, the legal advisor in DPSA, or the chief director responsible for legal services in DPSA, will deal with the legal issues around the PFMA, CETA, and other PCTAs, the 1% Skills Development Act levy, and whether there's a need to augment legislation in relation to the single public service and related issues. Dealing with the other issues quickly, Madam Chair. Yes, in terms of the individuals that were charged alongside with the finance manager, I think there were three other people that were charged and implicated, and I think some of them ended up in jail and some of them got suspended sentences, but there were convictions in relation to that. It was operating like a family ring. We used their account numbers and funds were being transferred and so on. And if I can respond to another question related to that, the problem there in terms of why it occurred in terms of the fraud is the individual, it was a flaw in the system where the individual can make particular payments, but he can go into the system and without authorization then correct or change the account numbers to reflect his own account. So you leave the learner's name, but you change the account number not to the learner but to yourself. So we were able to then correct that. So the moment we picked it up, we went and corrected the system thereafter. So that was the main problem in terms of that particular process. In terms of reclaiming money, the moment we picked up on this particular issue, I think it was in May of that year, We then froze all bank accounts. There were nine bank accounts that we identified that were not matching the learner's bank accounts. So we froze all of those bank accounts, and all of that money was then transferred back to the PCTA. So we saved, I can't remember. It was close to about 900 or 1,000 at that point, in term, but I can't remember the exact figures, Madam Chair. But we froze those accounts, and after the case, those monies were returned. And there is a process in place to deal with all of those things. The second part, in terms of the plan to strengthening and supporting PCTA, as we indicated, the MOU, the Memorandum of Understanding between PCTA and DPSA, is aimed at strengthening those relationships. It's aimed at ensuring that PCTA has the systems in place, it has the relevant mechanisms, policies, practices in place to ensure their independence going forward. So that's how we're strengthening them. There is an ongoing meeting between ourselves and PCTA to support them. We also engage jointly between PCTA, DPSA, and the Accountants General to make sure all of those mechanisms are in place. So we are strengthening, we are working with them closely. I can answer the other question around what is the target date. The target date we have in mind is 1 April 2011, when the new CETA environment is clarified. Where do we go to? How do we take it forward? And that's the direction we're going. So we're working very closely with them in dealing with those issues. The effect on the training, yes, there's been, I'm sure, with all of these difficulties and difficulties within PCTA itself, it had a negative impact on public service training in general. And I think that's an area we want to focus on, and that's the area we want to take very seriously. You'll notice it's an area that's also identified as part of the terms of reference between the Minister for Higher Education and Training and the Minister for Public Service and Administration, is to deal with the issue of coordinating of training and to improve training and development in the public service in general. So there is that area that we need to deal with. But I want to also say, during this period, although we had some difficulties in PCTA, training was still ongoing. Training was ongoing from the side of Palama. Training was ongoing in terms of all your provincial academies. During this period, almost every single province established provincial academies. And that training was ongoing in a sense. So training has been taking place, learners have been appointed, and work has been going on.
Yeah, we can take a follow-up. Is it on the issue that is responded to now?
Can I then request that we get a report of the total number of public servants that were trained through those difficult times, the progress they made in terms of the qualifications and so on, or whatever accreditation they got, and for which period, to also try and establish their whereabouts after that. Thank you.
Okay, I'll proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I made a note of that. The next one is the secondment of staff and the choice to remain, do we have space or not, and the issue of the anxiety. I think that is a difficult area. Yes, it is, I'm sure, a very difficult period for the staff, and they are very anxious as to what is their future and what is their status. The reason for putting the choice was to address that anxiety of staff, because they were not sure about their own future and what happens to them. So the choice was there to say, in the event PCTA doesn't continue, you still have a home in DPSA. You're permanent appointed staff, and you're not going to lose your job. So that was the basis of trying to address their anxiety. But come 1 April, we need to look at a process of their secondment and their continued employment and transfer to PCTA. To be honest, at this stage, DPSA doesn't have any space to accommodate these individuals. But, I mean, as a process, we can look at, when we talk about accommodation in DPSA, it doesn't necessarily mean in DPSA. We can also look at accommodation in the other departments based on deployment. So we will look at opportunities if these individuals are not accommodated in PCTA. That's if, and we believe very strongly that they will take up permanent positions in PCTA once we clarify the landscape of PCTA going forward. And that's the understanding there. So the target date, again, as I indicated, is 1 April 2011. The question around the outputs, the purpose of putting that table was simply to clarify, Madam Chair, was to clarify the roles and responsibility between the three organizations, between PCTA, ALAMA, and DPSA. The outputs in relation to those specific areas are covered in our operational plans. when I did the last presentation, a number of those areas I covered, and I'm sure when Talama does its operational plan, those areas will be covered in the operational plan. The PwC report we'll have to deal with as well at some stage, but can I hand over to the CEO as well as to MP? Thanks.
Proceed.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Shamira Huluman, appointed CEO 2 weeks ago at the PCTA. Thank you very much. But you would note that in the presentation that I intended making, there is a proper action plan around a lot of these issues that have been raised by committee members. Specifically on the Auditor General's report or an action plan that we have put in place to finalize some of the issues. But the difference, I think, in answering the question around why would we say this is a much improved report than the previous one, I think here the balances or the finances that were disclosed in that particular financial statements have been verified by the Auditor General. But they have given a disclaimer again, and there are critical issues that need to be finalized, particularly around the NSF liability and so forth. So those things have been put into a plan of action so that we can resolve those audit queries as a matter of urgency. The annual report linked to that, the annual report and the auditor's report has been submitted to Parliament on the 30th of August. We are just awaiting a date for us to present to the committee. So we are just awaiting that particular date. Then with respect to accounting systems, as the Acting DG has indicated, that previously PCTA relied on the systems that were there by the DPSA. What we have done now is, when we say procured, we've actually purchased the actual accounting system, both pastoral accounting and payroll, which is now is functional within the PCTA itself. It's loaded in all of the computer systems. The CFO, who started on the 1st of August, is currently putting all the measures in place to ensure that the systems are working. We have also recruited now a financial accountant, a financial officer, and a financial clerk, who will be starting on the 1st of October, so that we can ensure that most of our financials can be run independently by ourselves, including payroll. And I think the deadline there in terms of what we are looking at around issues of getting PCTA to operate independently from the DPSA, as well as finalizing all of these outstanding issues that have been raised by the AG, is the 31st of March 2011. So even linked to the SIU investigation, the board did receive the PwC presentation on the forensic audit that was done in early August, and we have now last week actually met with SIU and tabled or referred to the SIU, the PwC report, and by next week we will then finalize the brief, and the intention also is to finalize those alleged potential fraud of 10.8 million as well, and we're hoping that that also be finalized by the end of this financial year. Now, part of the questions that have been asked by members, whether people within the staff that could have been part of the finance managers, the fraud that has been committed and there could be actors that are still around. Well, part of the discussions that we've had with SIU includes doing lifestyle audits with some of the staff that are currently there, and also thoroughly investigating where their negligence may have lied during the issues of the fraud that took place in 2005. So I must say that I'm...
Sorry, may I just interrupt in the light of time, because we still have other two presentations coming. I believe that the acting DG did touch most. Perhaps if there are other things, because we're still going to get into the PCTA presentation,
who might take them on board. I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm just worried about time at this point in time. Just to outline the processes, members, we welcome DG and the Minister for Higher Education and Training. We are now joined by both of them and the department at large. As we indicated, that they will be arriving and we will be having a presentation on the PC Tower. We will be proceeding to that area again. I'm sure I'm going to afford all of us just a 10-minute break so that we come back to the presentation by the Higher Education and Training Minister. Is that a hand, Honourable Dreyer? On?
Okay. And if you allow me, that the PwC forensic report has been finalized. They discussed it. The CEO just told us we, as a committee, as a parliamentary oversight committee, need a copy of that report. And I've been asking and asking and asking, and I just meet resistance, resistance, resistance. We must have it, please, by the end of this week in our panel.
Okay, you know, I think on this issue, I did emphasize that when we requested something as a committee, we definitely have to get it. If we didn't, perhaps I'm sure part of what Inter we were going to respond to that, perhaps. But the fact of the matter, we know that our relationship had been characterized by a lot of conflicts. We're not finding one another with PCTA. There's been so much. We believe from this meeting today onwards, we might be having a way forward, because the presentation was clearly saying this is where we are. And the next presentation is going to say this is where we're going to. So as a matter of principle, please, the Department of Public Service and Administration, let it be the last time when something is raised and, you know, we come back and raise it again. It's not her issue. It's a committee's issue, because it was raised in Parliament. And as a matter of principle, that has to be attended to. I would wish that we need a response why we didn't get the copy, and we also need a copy as well. So if we clarify that aspect so that we don't think it's an individual issue, but it's a committee matter. Can I then afford you the 10-minute break? We come back to your presentation, and then we'll proceed from there.
I'm going to go to the next one. All of you in one day.
And if you're lucky, you'll see
September. Yeah. Yeah, I was saying to Shamila, I wish the deploy her back. She's saying no, she's happy where she is. She says she's working with Lumka. Yeah. Now, where do I find? Yeah, this is not your computer. Oh, maybe I'll find it. Is it? Yes, I have. I just want to email it to me. I may not get it ever again. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, I'm sure we have to start. As soon as everyone is settled, we'll then proceed. Just to indicate that we are still going to have a presentation after the Minister for Higher Education and Training, we're still going to have a presentation by Palama. And also just to emphasize, with Palama, we did have an agreement. We're not going to present the whole background of the strategic planning session, but you're going to focus on your strategic issues in terms of where we are heading as Palama. So at this point in time, I'll just get an indication, DG and Minister, if the Minister is ready to present, we can then proceed and allow the Minister to do a presentation on the way forward on PCTA. Over to you, Honorable Minister Nzimande.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, colleagues and comrades. Thanks for this invitation to come and present to this portfolio committee on the PCTA. It's something that we've been looking forward to because the PCTA is a very critical CETA, both from the standpoint of the Department of Higher Education and Training, and also I agreed with Minister Baloyi on the importance of this CETA. And we welcome the fact that yourselves you have lifted this issue up for particular focus. This presentation basically is going to be sharing with you what we have agreed with Minister Baloyi on how to move forward on the challenges that are facing the peace sector. We start by pointing out that given the challenges and the problems that the CETA has had, the Skills Development Act permits the Minister of Higher Education and Training now, after consulting with the National Skills Authority and the CETA in question, to direct the Director General to appoint an administrator to take over the administration of a CETA. Maybe let me also give you a little bit of background in this regard. The National Skills Authority is a body established under the Skills Development Act to advise the Minister of Higher Education and Training. The law still says, of course, labor now, until we are able to clean that up. On questions relating to skills development. And in looking at the performance of all the CETAs, the National Skills Authority advised that we take action against a few CETAs, the key CETA being one of them. And we've accepted that recommendation from the National Skills Authority. And then are acting in terms of Section 15(1) of the Skills Development Act. But in the meantime, we've just said we can't just be acting in a dry manner without also looking at what are related processes that need to be undertaken. Hence our agreement with the minister to establish a joint ministerial task team to look at the peace sector specifically. This task team consists of four representatives from the DPSA, four representatives from our department, and two officials from the National Treasury. Now, I'm just going to then outline the terms of reference that we have given this joint task team, what it is supposed to look into. The first critical thing, we have said that the task team must help to guide us on how the two departments can collaborate to strengthen skills development and human resources development across the public service. And we've also asked them to do this looking at the implementation of Section 30 of the Skills Development Act, which was quoted there in terms of what it says. The Act, in fact, had directed government to set aside 1% of its payroll, all departments in the provinces, from the 1st of April 2001 for the training and education of its employees. Now, I have been sensitized by the chairperson already that this is a matter that is of concern to you. And we must admit that as government in the past, we had not done enough on the score, and this is one matter that must be urgently corrected as part of taking forward the mandate of the Skills Development Act, and that the PC is quite central. I will jump the next slide, because that Section 30 and 38, that was just by way of reminding you what the Act says. You can move on to the next one, Noctu. But also we are asking the task team to consider the implications for the public service of a proposal that we have as the Department of Higher Education and Training, which we call PIVOT. Which are, in short, these are programs that are proposed in the National Skills Development Strategy 3 to guide all the CETAs as part of enhancing occupational programs or qualifications in the entire country. And also now we are asking this task team to look at the possibilities on how we can implement this program in the public service. We have also asked the task team to look at the dual reporting and accountability structure between our two departments insofar as the PCTA is concerned. We are responsible for the CITAs as a whole, but DPSA, of course, has got an interest because it's responsible directly for the public service. So the CITA will inevitably be reporting to the two departments, and we want the task team to clarify for us how is that to propose, how that should be done. Because, as we say here, I am responsible for the implementation of the provisions of the Skills Development Act, which would include, of course, the National Skills Development Strategy. And the Minister of Public Service and Administration is responsible for governance and management in that regard. Furthermore, continuing with the terms of reference that we have given this task team, we thought it is important to take you through these so that the committee members are aware of what we have asked the task team to do, and members, of course, are welcome to also make their own proposals and suggestions. And also we said to the task team it must look at the role and function of the PCTA in terms of the related structures that are within the DPSA that perform these functions. For instance, the development of a sector skills plan for the public sector. This is a very critical issue, which include establishment of learning programs, approving workplace skills plan and annual training reports in the public sector, as well as generally monitoring education and skills development provision in the public sector. And also within these terms of reference, the promotion of learning programs, identifying workplaces for practical work experience, supporting the development of learning materials, improving the facilitation of learning and assisting in the conclusion of agreement for learning programs and so on. In short, what we are saying, we are asking this team to do is to say, help us with this, because we believe that the public sector is a very critical site for skills development and training on an ongoing basis. Furthermore, we have said the task team must look at the PSC report, in short, and also to look at the effectiveness of the PCTA in facilitating line function and transversal training between the PCTA and other CITAs. You are quite familiar with this, and I'm sure that it was also part of dealing with this that you asked us to come and deal with this, as well as matters relating to the status of staff in the PCTA and so on. Maybe one, before talking about process and time frame, we do need to say that the PCTA has been structured somehow differently from the other CITAs. Because all the other CITAs, it's basically employer representatives and trade union representatives. And because of the manner in which it has operated in the past, it has had a particular relationship with the DPSA. Something that we'll have to look at, as I have said, what kind of relationship, as well as reporting to us. We will be appointing an administrator soon. DG, we gazetting when? Within the next week to appoint an administrator. An administrator means doesn't replace the CEO. Simply means the administrator takes the functions of the board. Clearly, this task team will have to consult with the administrator of the PCTA, as well as organized labor, provincial and national governments, and other CITAs that are serving the public, and critically Palama, which we also have a great interest in as the Department of Higher Education and Training. We expect that this task team will report before the end of October 2010. And of course, once we process these things, I am sure that we will find a way of sharing this. And Chairperson, maybe next time around, when we take forward this process, it might also be helpful that perhaps we have a joint portfolio committee meeting with the Department of Higher Education and Training, so that ourselves we are able to move together.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister Nzimande. It's a difficult one. I've never called you that way. I have to. Okay. Honorable members, that's the presentation. I believe that it links very well also with the presentation that was done earlier on, in terms of them saying, here we are, this is the movement forward as we actually envisage. Can I then get some hands and in terms of interaction from the members for the interaction? And I'm sure the Palama, because it's here and it's going to use head from the minister himself, the interest that is there, and how we would actually look. We are very keen on collaboration of institutions, minister, and when we talk that language, it's part of what we've been trying to do as a committee to bring together synergy in terms of how we work. Honorable Dress, hand is up. Is there any other hand? Honorable Bikani, and okay. I'll take the three of you first. Honorable Dress.
Okay, thank you. Yes, the minister came in a little later and he missed the previous presentation at last, the biggest part of that presentation. But I had very, very critical questions during that time because of the history of PCETA. But that's not of your doing or the new CEO, the new CFO that's been appointed. Just want to say, well, good luck with taking over this hugely problematic PCETA. It's a long history of problems. Everything that could go wrong did. But I think it's moving in the right direction, and I'm certainly very glad that you are appointing an administrator to take over the functions of the board. There's a whole new slate of other appointments, and they should also belong together with all the other CETAs report to one minister, the same minister. It was an anomaly that we had this one CETA reporting to one minister and all the other CETAs to another department. So this is also a move in the right direction. But we'll be watching developments very closely. Thank you. Just a comment, no question.
Thanks, Honorable Dreher. Honorable Bikani.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the clarity from the Minister. I think it will assist processes a lot. I think one of the main things perhaps that we also need to get right is our coordination processes, where you'll find that, like in our instance, Palama being critical to us, I get the feeling that I don't know of who the four representatives are from DPSA or how they are constituted, but I think Palama is key in being part of that task team in particular. Perhaps they are one of the people, I don't know, but it also says something about the level of involvement or engagement to the processes that need to happen. Now, one of the key issues or the key problems that are being experienced in departments with the public services sector is this thing of consultancy work. I don't know to what extent or to what level is that also being attended to or being corrected, but I would get the feeling that the issues of training within the public service, because they are not getting enough relevant attention, I don't know, I posed the question earlier on, but perhaps there could be some clauses, legislative clauses, that we might have to look into. And those being part of the task team as key areas to bring out for us to be able to say we'd like to review them. I'm saying this also in the light of the Skills Development Fund Authority. There's a lot of reports we're running short of, a lot of reports. At no one stage do I remember, even in this platform of the committee, ever since we started in 2008, have we had a detailed report as to how these funds are really being conducted, where the problems are, if there's an AG's report, what does this AG's report say, and what needs to be corrected in relation to that, and if that the National Skills Fund is complying. In fact, if I had to suggest, we need a platform where those authorities, board members or whatever you want to call them, actually come to the level of the committee and come and present to us exactly what their status are. Somehow all their functions are hidden functions, which also bring a gap in the issues that we are having problems to in relation to public service training and the consultants. Then the issue of, okay, Mr. mentioned that the importance of the sector skills plan. There's too many flaws there, especially when it comes to where we start off with the audit for submission of the WSP. Accountability processes are very poor. As a result, you are not sure if the work that's been done in departments is progressive and improving, or if it's stagnant, or if we're being lied to, plain out being lied to. If this process could be understood properly, it actually does generate a lot of money for you to can increase your training, you know, in after every cycle of having trained some public servants. But for some reason or the other, you rather have more issues of missing funds than issues of enough have been trained to improve capacity within the public service. I think that also, I don't know, I'm not sure the act says in relation to that as well, but that also needs to be looked into in terms of us hoping to get finished in the whole process. Okay, you've already mentioned that the PCTA is somehow structured differently from the rest of the CTAs. But as an entity of government, perhaps there needs to be a relook into where the CTAs are placed, which is happening obviously. But without excluding certain CTAs, they must just be under one umbrella and a whole re-engineering process taking place if we are expecting to succeed. And in the process of that re-engineering taking place, it will then assist us to coordinate it with the only body that we know for training, being Palama, being incorporated in the plans around the redevelopment of or the structuring of the entities, in particular of the CTAs as a whole, because a lot of their training is not necessarily relevant. That, of course, would include, I won't repeat myself, mainly the funding flow processes. The funding flow processes are a big problem, and there's not enough accountability. You'll get a situation where training takes place, you will submit these WSPs, but the very CTAs, they don't have a system or a way of hitting back to the department to check if the training has really happened. Hence, we find a situation where departments sometimes use the training fund for other issues, and nothing is ever said about that. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Bitani. Honorable Ramatakan.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and the presentation by the Minister. I just want to ask on the last slide, there's a last bullet. I know that the Minister speaks about the report that will be tabled by the end of October. But just maybe the outlook of the minister beyond. I just want to understand the kind of process. What is the outlook in terms of the full functionality of the board itself, given that you're going to be the administrator, from the administrator, the recommendation, and of course, instating or reinstating the status quo of a functionality of a board. So what is the outlook in terms of times, in terms of mapping to get into that finality? The second small question is, are we not investigating any legal issues with regard to the some part of the existing board, if there are any members? Just for clarity, last time, if my memory serves me right, there were some existing board members, given that once you've gazetted, then the function will then revert into the administrator. Is there no envisage of the comeback issues and dispute around the existing board members that are there? Just those two questions.
Hey, thank you, Honorable Mohamed. Honorable Suka.
Thank you, Chairperson. I appreciate also this
the presentation that was made, as the previous speakers commended the minister. I think we might not have many questions as of today because it's just a briefing, and we are more bordering on the law and putting the systems right for the future. I think the taste of it is when we are going to interrogate it based on an action plan. Fortunate on his last bullet point, there are time frames, which means beyond that, we'll be measuring the department based on its time frames that they set beyond October. Because also there are gaps that I think we would have asked, but surely those gaps might be filled in the process of developing that action plan that must speak directly to those things that you want to turn around. Because if you are saying, for instance, on page 4 on the question of the payroll, you know, the percentages and so on, that is linked to the training, by when, how many and so on. So those questions might follow up once you've got a tangible plan for implementation. My little concern is also the question of the dual role for reporting purposes. One is reporting on governance in terms of the PSA, the minister, and also the other one to the National Minister of Higher Education. I would want to see a seamless approach without creating bottlenecks and having them to account the officials on both ways. If there is a way of streamlining it so that there's one reporting line for both, it would be very nice so that we don't create unnecessary bureaucracy. Well, if it's the nature of governance, you know, in terms of the institutions, so it be. But if it's, there is a way of avoiding that, I would want to see that kind of a situation. Equally to the pivotal program, the pivotal or pivotal, is very critical. Yeah, pivotal, very important program, you know. I'm saying chapters in even that program, when it's been rolled out in terms of its action plan, because it should be translated into an implementable program. We would want to look into that. But as for the presentation in general, I don't have problems because there was a little bit of delays. Because if you look at it, into its history, coming to where we are, we should have been far, way far from what we are doing today. But at least they are trying to turn around based on the challenges. You remember the first presentation that speak about these matters. So I'm comfortable, except that we need to move with a little bit of speed and do things differently from previous. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member Saib. Can I then request the Honourable Minister to respond?
Yeah, I'll ask the DG to talk to, well, to add to what I might leave out, but specifically ask her to respond on the matter of the sector skills plan. She's fast becoming our expert on that. So I would be much more comfortable if she talks about that. No, thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Dre. With your support, we can be able to overcome anything. And especially this portfolio committee has a particularly important role in terms of oversight on this front. And I hope that you will continue to be active in your oversight on this front, and also that we cooperate. The fact that there are problems with the PCTA must not also divert us from the fact that we can really turn it around into a huge asset if we do things correctly. So, and there are possibilities for doing that. I'm not so sure, DG, about whether in the task team from Minister Balo there is a representative from Palama. It's something, though, that you can consider because it must happen. That is very important. You raise the issue of consultants. You know, this is an issue bigger than just the PCTA. It's a challenge across the CETA system. It's a maybe let me also preface this by saying that it may be important that perhaps we could jointly with the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education and Training would be willing to come and give you at some stage a full briefing on our emerging skills development strategy as a whole. And that may help to answer a whole range of questions, not only about the PCTA, but broadly. Now that I think about it, DG, we didn't think about it. We have our big skills summit starting tomorrow and finishing on Friday. It would have been good to have. So I think we should. If this committee can send a couple of people, I'm sure that we can still accommodate them. Because thinking about it, actually, the public service is the single largest employer in this country. We can work at that. I think that is actually very important, you know, because it would also help just to give you a sense of beginning to do that. It doesn't substitute the meeting with the joint portfolio committee meeting where we can brief you and you can be able to engage us and get more ideas. The more ideas we have, the better. That's our approach. We should also, by the way, address matters relating to the National Skills Fund, you know, and all those things. Maybe the DG may want to comment on that as well as the SSPs. I think the question by Honorable Ramatlakane and Suka are related. Because PCTA must be aligned to the entire CETA landscape. All the CETAs have got to be aligned to that. That shouldn't, though, take away that each CETA will have its own unique contribution. Hence our insistence this time that we are not going to relicense any CETA without a proper sector skills plan that we are satisfied that it actually does grasp the training challenges in its own area. Which then relates to the other point that Honorable Ramatlakane was asking, you know, that when we appoint an administrator, we must make sure that one of the challenges of the administrator is to make sure also that with the relicensing process of the CETA that's going to be taking place now, it's also to prepare the PCTA along those lines for purposes, because we are going to relicense the CETA. We're doing away with one or two other CETAs, but we are relicensing possibly from the recommendations now that we are looking at. We're likely to relicense the PCTA as is because it's very important. In other words, we don't want that during the process when you have an administrator, the terms of reference of the administrator must include strengthening and repositioning the CETA such that it's aligned also with the relicensing processes, apart from dealing with whatever problems are there. So, well, legal issues, you know, we are not aware of any legal issues, but if we have your support, maybe we won't have legal issues. Because you are part, you know, of this. And who sits on the board is government, you know. Well, maybe you're not aware of any legal issues insofar as this CETA is concerned, because I must say we've had very fruitful engagements between the two DGs, which also has assisted us as ministers, you know, that we more or less, not more or less, we are at one. Hence this task team and the clarity of terms of reference. I think also that addresses Honorable Suka's question about what happens beyond October. I nearly said what happens beyond Red October. I'm sorry. Chairperson. The last point I want to make before maybe you allow the DJ to say something is that we are having a fairly extensive proposal that we are still working internally. At some stage, we will share it with you. We are not sure. Maybe it's not possible before the end of this year. About training in the public service. And it's something that we are going to be sharing with DPSA and possibly take it to cabinet at some stage, because we believe that public sector is a huge space for training. And as I said, Chairperson, when we have a briefing, we can take you through other things as well, because amongst others, we are also looking at the SOEs. The SOEs in the past used to play a very critical role in skills development. But unfortunately, that capacity has been run down, and it's one of the things that we are looking at. With your permission, then, let the DG add where I might have left other things, and specifically to talk about the SSP.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think that the best way to try and explain our vision of how the SSPs must operate is actually to get back to basics in terms of understanding what's the purpose of a CETA. What was intended when the Skills Development Act was passed by Parliament so many years ago, which I think was 1998? But there it is, it goes all the way back. And the passage of the Skills Development Act by Parliament, I think, was an immense moment in terms of saying that employers and employees together accept responsibility for, within particular sectors, to collaborate and cooperate in order to achieve a realization of the skills needs for that sector. That's what we achieved. In fact, I think for the purpose of a developmental state, we need to understand that in the skills development system, through the skills levy, every year we have this amazing resource of 8 billion rand or more to intervene in skills development. So if we started that, then the next point to make is that for all sectors of the economy, and, you know, one can analyze the economy in different ways, but if you look at a sector like mining or agriculture or whatever, the employers make a contribution in terms of their skills levy. That contribution comes into the coffers of the CETA and the NSF. And it's the responsibility of the employers and the employees, together with government, to sit down and say, in this sector, what are the skills needs? And the importance of looking at the skills needs is so that then that resource of the skills levy can be properly directed towards needs that have been agreed by employers and employees. So we kind of forget it, because CETAs get absorbed in all kinds of controversies, and you heard a lot about them today. But if we get back to basics, employers, employees sitting down, agreeing what needs to be done about skills, and business and community are also partners, but particularly, government and community. But in the CETAs, the boards of CETAs consists of government, employers, organizations, employee organizations. Now, what it means for the CETA is where it gets complicated. Because whereas for all other CETAs, it's employer, organizations, government, and employees. For the CETA, it's a government and the unions with which government negotiates. So let's first of all understand that. Need I say more? And obviously there's seasonal and cyclical relationships. You know, maybe you don't want to have a board meeting for a few weeks until things calm down. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that the training needs of the public service are broad. We've got a single public service, national or provincial, is more or less the way it works. Local government is still separate. And you've got government, you've got training needs across all of the different government departments. And you've got training needs across a range of occupations within that and across different levels. and it's extraordinarily complex. Now, I know that the DPSA has done huge amounts of work in understanding those training needs. There's a whole lot of projects that you already know about because you look at them in this committee. And what I think our concern is how can we effectively use the notion of a CETA to make sure that the good work that DPSA does comes into the work of this board, which is employees and employees sitting down together to understand, so that both employer and employee support the skills plans. The second problem that Minister alluded to is that for businesses, businesses are compelled through SARS to levy their to give their levy. Government, we still need, and that's why this committee is so important, to ensure that all government departments are accountable. Let me make it as simple as that. For their equivalent percentage of payroll. Now, all government departments are already running their own HRD. So the question is that the CETA has this complex task, and I have it with me, and I must thank the CETA for the work that they've done with the sector skills plans already. But I don't think we could even begin to get it right in the first year of working together in this way. And I think that the CEO and the board and the people within is that we need to have a relationship with DPSA where we understand comprehensively what's the role of PLAMA, what's the role of the PCTA, which has some accreditation responsibilities allocated by SAQA in time that will be taken over for QCTO. But we need to get back to the basics, understand employer and employee agreeing together on what's the analysis of the skilled needs across all government departments at every level, national and provincial. And the matter is even further complicated, which I want to discuss with the task team. Because historically the PCTA has been asked to make sure that there's coordination across all of the other CETAs in relation to government work. And I'm not sure that that is even necessary and why we've complicated it like that. It depends on where the money goes. And at the moment, the money isn't really going anywhere, so I don't know what it is that we're disagreeing about. So I think we need to say if 1% of a government payroll goes to the NSF at the PCTA, like happens with all other CETAs, that's your training budget. Public service. But then we've got to work out. And that's why this task team is so important. So in preparing for this meeting with Minister, I was saying, maybe we should avoid getting into too much detail. Let the task team do its work, Chairperson. Because I'm throwing out things because you've asked the question. But in fact, I would prefer that you give us the time to sit with DPSA. Because things that I've argued here will learn more through the task team process. I would rather have the opportunity to learn and to come back and to present the task team report on the basis of much more considered consideration of the issues.
Thank you, Minister and DG. Honourable Bikani, you still want to have a further question?
No, Chair, I was just going to suggest that at our level, if we could have the researcher assist us with, I don't know, perhaps to the Public Service Commission also doing its own feasibility research in terms of the status of the CETAs for our own thinking. And I'm also now thinking of the possibility, not necessarily now, after we see where the road is taking us, to possibly have it also as a debate perhaps in Parliament. Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. Honourable Bikani, it's part of what we said when we started. We looked into the assessment of our term 3 program, and we realized all issues that we touched, it's just touching them, but they're actually huge, they're big. We need to have a structured way of how to then zoom into them in a broader way, including collaboration, that we're doing. What you're saying is also critical, part of amplifying the same issues that you said. For instance, even the research capacities, we talked about it. Many more, we had a finance and our committee on PESA you know, something that it's not a closed chapter. We still have to go into big time. So I think it's an agreement in terms of this term. It's opening up for a huge oversight work that we have to do as the committee. And you wanted to add something?
No,
it's fine. Okay, I think there are issues that will definitely take forward, and surely we do believe that it is necessary for us to collaborate also with the portfolio committee for education on these issues. That's one issue. But also, while there was a presentation earlier on, I think a part of the biggest problems that we had as this committee is that there was an audit report, and our feeling was that nothing was happening, and we're definitely, you know, fighting with the department and the PCTA. And it was actually explained earlier on that there are people who are at the moment arrested and so on, which we actually say most of the time we do know there is corruption. But sometimes when we approach and deal with it, we don't talk about it. You know, it's like a government doesn't move on other areas. Issues such as this, I'm sure, because we've got an anti-corruption program that is facing us for the next term. You know, those are some of the things we really have to pick up, but challenge also the others that are still, you know, we're unclear what's happening on them as part of also our movement forward, hence the hugeness of this portfolio committee on public safety and administration. But I really need to emphasize that we appreciate the contribution, the input, and the clarity, including the way forward in terms of this problem that we've been having all along as this committee on PCTA, in terms of taking us forward. Yes, of course, we can't say it's well and good. We understand where we are getting to, and we appreciate the explanation. I realize the DG is stemming back even as far as NECC times, you know, that can we really go back to basics, which is quite good, but we do really need this kind of engagement because they sort of, you know, from time to time provide clarity, and we do must make an impact in terms of the implementation of in the public service. I know that the minister wants to rush out, but okay, yes, in the light that we have Palama, and Palama is so critical, the DG has actually indicated to us that she will be here to listen to the presentation moving forward. And we will, Minister, will release you. I don't know if you need a 5-minute break. I doubt. Okay, let's take just a 5-minute break. And then we have the slide of Palama. We come back to the presentation. We're only remaining with 40 minutes on our time. So 5 minutes back, and then we'll finish.
Remember, you're all bigger now.
And then there was trying to be nice to you and to say, I'm not just you, and let's say it was maybe going to happen.
It's working.
What is the problem?
Because it's a ministerial presentation.
Thank you.
Okay, welcome back, Honorable Suka. Sit down. Yes, thanks, Honorable Members. I know it's a tight day, there are a lot of presentations, but we need all of these presentations while we can be able to focus. I am going to then request Palama. I can see it's ready. The side is up there. I'm going to request Palama to then present. Palama.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I'm going to push quite fast to be done in less than 20 minutes. In the input, Chairperson, that we'll be making, we'll focus. There are three issues that we wanted to touch on. But in the presentation, we'll spend more time on item two, based on your guidance, Chairperson, which is the towards the strategic framework and the issues around public service cadre development. That would be the area where we spend most of our input on. Chairperson, in 2008, when the minister just took office, he posed a number of questions to us as Palama, 10 of which really focused on the extent to which our training was guided by the use of brokering, the extent to which how do we define ourselves as a government training academy, whether our institutional form was appropriate, whether the existing public service capacity is being used to strengthen our public administration training capacity, what is our strategic thrust, what is our niche area, and a number of issues, including the financial model and various other areas. It was on this basis that we then embarked on this further transformation process to which we hope to provide the portfolio committee with an update. Chairperson, I'm going to jump through to the strategic framework, which is the essence of the processes that we've undertaken, what it has resulted on. We've had a number of engagements, three engagements involving our colleagues from DPSA, involving our colleagues from National Treasury, CPSI, and CETA, in an attempt to reach towards this strategic framework that I need to talk to around. So I'm going to skip straight to the strategic framework, Chairperson, which is on slide 11. The essence of us talking to issues around further transforming is mainly informed by the pronouncements by the South African state that has pronounced itself as developmental. It's also a constitutional issue in Chapter 10 of the Constitution, the need towards a development-oriented public service. It is in this context that we realize that Palama is central in terms of proper training at all levels of government, leadership development, reorientation, and issues working towards retaining of skilled personnel. The Public Service Act, both the acting DG from DPSA and the DG from Higher Education talked to it, and I will not repeat it, and which then informs our mandate at the moment. But there is a problem, and these are the issues that we felt in responding to the minister's query that we needed to problematize further. At the moment, Chairperson, and as discussed already in the inputs from Higher Education and our colleagues in DPSA, public service training is uncoordinated, it's incoherent, and it's largely outsourced. That's the current state of public service training. The coverage remains very much inadequate. Honorable Bikanye did raise the question of how many public servants trained and so forth. At the moment, as Palama, we've been able to cover around 38,000 public servants in terms of the training that we do. The impact of the training that is out there remains not assessed. It remains largely focused on junior, middle, and senior managers. The President has raised a number of times the issue of frontline staff, administration support, and that's an area that remains not very well adequately covered. The executive also is not largely covered. Local government training remains neglected despite the challenges around local government that we've had. Relevance and responsiveness, we've heard about it from the portfolio committee this morning. And the issue of cost recovery, because at the moment we're funded by Parliament and some of the training we have to then charge. The cost recovery model that we use has turned out to be largely expensive. So the questions raised by the minister, as I indicated at the beginning, lead us to this kind of a problem statement, and it is on that basis that we've proposed this strategic framework and the areas that we'll be dealing with in the strategic framework. Honorable Chair, you did highlight in our invite that at the same time as we're moving towards the strategic framework, The Portfolio Committee is keen to know what are the things that we began doing in transitioning us towards the vision of Palama in a few months' time. And there are these 10 areas that the Minister already in this financial year has tasked us to deal with around public sector cadre development, around issues of deployment to coal face of delivery, issues of frontline and support staff. We've already started dealing with them. Issues around monitoring and evaluation and support to the performance monitoring and evaluation unit in the presidency are areas we've already started working on, and also supporting local government through tenure and structure. So as we transition towards the further transformation of Palama, we're not sitting and doing what we've been doing all along. We're beginning to trial and pilot some interventions that we envisage will be key in moving us forward. What is the end state? The end state, we reconnected with the white paper of 1995 on transformation of the public service. And it raises five key issues that we feel in Palama moving forward would have to reconnect with. Issues of enabling public servants to carry out their jobs effectively. Issues around increasing representativeness in the public service, acquiring a new development-oriented professionalism, also contributing towards institutional changes, and more importantly, allowing and enabling public servants to better understand the needs of communities. And this is what links with the area that I mentioned on coalface deployment of public servants as part of that process of allowing public servants to better understand the needs of communities that they serve. Of course, the medium-term strategic framework does highlight a number of areas that government has envisaged until 2014. At the core is the capacity of the public sector to be able to plan, secondly, to be able to implement and coordinate, but lastly, to be able to monitor and evaluate. And we regard part of our training interventions have to allow the state that has pronounced itself as developmental to be able to respond in that manner. What is the first part? The first part of this strategic framework, Chairperson, deals with CADA attributes. And it responds to the question the minister raised around what is the niche and the strategic thrust of Palama moving forward. And we feel that one of those niche areas has to deal with CADA development. And there are eight areas that we've identified around CADA development that increasingly when we say that as Palama we're beginning to achieve our objectives, it's when we've been able to develop public servants who break new ground, who inspire success, who raise the standard, who believe that nothing is impossible, who make a difference to the people, who take collective responsibility and teamwork, who are on board and own service delivery processes, unlike the current model that's largely outsourced. Also at the same time, those would be public servants who are international activists. So if you ask us what would be the niche, that would be the one area that we would increasingly want to focus on. But at the same time, we believe that moving forward, we have to connect with the executive and support the executive in terms of its constitutional responsibilities, in terms of its strategic and ethical role, issues around strategy, budgets, and policy, and overall, allowing the executive to be able to enhance its oversight responsibilities. The second part of the strategic framework, Chairperson, looks at resourcing. We've had a long debate this morning around the Skills Development Levies Act and the extent to which government may or must budget 1%. Now, over and above that, it might help the portfolio committee simply to understand the context. At the moment, as Palama, we get a grant from Parliament. For this financial aid, it's around 117 million. We have about 232 permanent staff. If you compare the magnitude of the work that increasingly we will have to worry about, the 1.5 million public servants, and you use an example such as, for instance, a university such as UNISA, which currently trains about 262,000 students per annum. If you look at their grant, the grant that UNISA gets from government is about 1.2 billion that UNISA gets compared to the 117 million that Palama gets. Of course, their staff is also 4,286. Yes, there is a lot of give and take, you know, the number of days training that they do, the kind of training that they do, and so forth, which is likely different from what we do. But if you look at the magnitude and the numbers, there is a lot of scope that we'll have to discuss around this. So it will have implications for the extent to which we are able to move from the current training of 30,000 public servants to an increased number, which might not necessarily be 1.5 million immediately if you look at the magnitude and the challenges that come with that. And therefore, we are fully in support of the process around accessing to the 1% of the government skills development fund. We can have discussions around the mechanisms, but we believe that that 1% is there. We just have to have a discussion around how to access it, how to synchronize, and how to harmonize in a manner that deals with public service training in a coordinated and coherent manner. We did some analysis, Chairperson. The acting DG of EPSA says it gives him 2.7 billion. We did the same analysis and it gives us about 3 billion, but the difference is not huge. So we're looking at between 2.7 billion and 3 billion if you have a discussion around the 1% and how we utilize it. The third area, Chairperson, has to be the curriculum model. And it's a question that the minister also raised with us already in 2008 around if we were to make key programs compulsory, would we have the capacity and what would those be? And we believe that we do have to have a component of our training focusing on mandatory programs, which must be on board. They must rely on onboard capacity. They must be compulsory. They must be generic. And they must be centrally coordinated. And again, they will have to involve a certain level of coalface deployment, linking in with what the White Paper of 1995 says about connecting with the needs of the community. The curriculum module also will have a second component that we are proposing, which could look at demand-led programs Those would be your specialized and would be based on demand. Those would be informed by research and needs analysis. They would look at unique skills, and they would increasingly rely on expertise outside the public service. The corporate form, which is the fourth area that we are looking at in the strategic framework, has to deal with what the minister said, at the moment we are largely a broker of training services. And how do we move away from being a broker of training services to being a trainer for government? And we are proposing, Chairperson, that there must be two components. One, it has to be premised on the need for us to take direct responsibility as a state for training public servants. Two, we will have to worry about increasing the scale, because it does not help to continue training 38,000 public servants well and forgetting the rest. If we have the magnitude that we're looking at, how do we progress towards reaching an increased number of public servants is one of the areas that we're worried about. Therefore, we're proposing that 70% of public service training would have to be done in-house moving forward. And in-house, in our view, has two components. One is the issue of what we call master trainers who would be part of the training corps of Palama. So this would be Palama staff employed by Palama, and there would be the training corps. But dealing with the question the minister raised also around how can we utilize the resource that is existing out there in the public service, which might not necessarily be located within Palama. We're saying that 70% will include those government trainers who are located within government, and we'd have to put in place mechanisms and processes of pulling them in. Our colleagues in DPSA would have to support us in putting some kind of regulations to allow that to happen and some certification of those trainers within government. So we'd have to work on that process, but it's a proposal that we're having at the moment. The remaining 30%, of course, could be done through strategic partnerships, whether it be through higher education institutions, whether it be through further education and training institutions. At the same time, we'd have to certify and register those providers that work with us. The moving forward, we would hope that if these areas will succeed, we'll then be able to increasingly train public servants under an integrated public service framework with some targeted mandate and training in specified fields. Would have to also have a discussion around minimum training days. Maybe it could be 5, it could be less, it could be more. And also issues around serving for minimum days at service delivery points of government. And that would be another area that we discuss. Chairperson, we part of moving forward, we've already had engagements with our colleagues at DPSA on the organizational development. So that as we move beyond the strategic framework and we begin to say, if this is the strategic framework that has been discussed and agreed upon, what institutional form does it require? We will need a lot of OD support from DPSA. We've also pulled in our colleagues from National Treasury, because as we discuss some of these financial implications, they would have to be part of the process so that they understand where we're coming from and where we're moving based on the discussions that we're having here and some of the discussions that we're having with the minister. Chairperson, the rest of the input really is focusing on financial and organizational areas, and I've already highlighted the 117 million budget that we have in this financial year, and there's a breakdown there. And also in the presentation, there's information around the medium-term expenditure framework and the budget increases that we're looking at moving into the next 3-year period. And when you look at those medium-term expenditure framework, what you will see, for instance, that as things stand, in the next 3-year period, our budget increase will be around 10 million or so. So in the context of this discussion, a lot of that would obviously be subject to some changes, so I don't think it would be necessary for us to go into details on that. Suffice to also indicate, in the last financial year, our performance has been, we finalized the processes there, we continue to do training, we continue to do executive donor programs, gender mainstreaming training, e-learning training. We've already had our audit for 9-10 finalized, and it's really, we give us pleasure, Chairperson, also in this context to indicate that based on the audit report for 9-10, we've again received an unqualified audit report from the Auditor General. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much for the presentation, Honorable Treya.
you want to, you're already engaging with the presentation, isn't it? Madam Chair, short and sweet, on slide 37, expenditure trends. The three financial years, the yellow one tells us the compensation of employees. I see there's a steady trend going upwards, so the employees is taking up a bigger and bigger portion of the budget every year, whilst the goods and services, that's the actual service that you deliver, isn't that, that's been going down. So you're spending less and less on that. So that proportion between your personnel, your employees, and your actual goods and services are going in the wrong direction as far as I can see. Could you just explain that to us?
Okay. Is that all, Honourable Dreyer? Okay. Let's proceed to Honourable Bikani. Just to indicate that maybe it's nice that you are hearing, it's a piquet from Parliament, which therefore means if you see some of them disappearing here, it might be part of joining the march. So we're very much aware. Okay. Honourable Bikani.
Thank you, Chair. As I think we welcome this report, but it also takes us to the issue that it means there's a lot of transformation processes that need to take place, so and a lot of issues that need to be considered. But what I'd like to mention, since we had that presentation from higher education, one of the issues I think we need to look at is the placement of the provincial training and development centers that fall under the Premier's offices, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not sure about that anymore, the state of that. But these centers are in all the provinces. The Premier is in charge of them. And you find a situation where the training that's done under that umbrella is away from the training that's done at Palama's level and also away, obviously, from local government. But somewhere along the line, there's also interaction. So perhaps it should also be one of the issues that Parliament tries and focuses on and looks on in terms of centralizing or even the DSA for that matter of bringing back the training to perhaps be part of Parliament's area of plan to help improve centralize the public service training institutions that would relate to infrastructure in particular. I'm saying this also in the light that I think where Palama is also, in terms of infrastructure, they are they've hired that place and instead look at them having their own yard building and whatever you want to call the structure then. Yeah. And in that process, be take into cognizance those training and development institutes within provinces. Thanks.
Thanks, Honorable Bikani. Noting that you also have essential services as Parliament, can you then proceed to the... Is there another hand? Okay. Parliament, you can respond.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Just to touch on Honorable Dreyer's question, which relates to the fact that employee costs are going up. This is slide 37. Yes, it's a correct observation. The employee costs have been going up in the last 3 years. If you look at it, though, in relation to the vacancy rate, we still remain with a high vacancy rate. And it's in the context of the transition from Sandi to Palama. Part of that process has involved attempting to capacitate the organization to be able to increase our training and to be more and more relevant. So, but I suspect moving forward would hope that that would begin to balance out, because that trend cannot be allowed to continue unabated. So in the near future, would hope that it would even out. Honorable Bikanye raised the issue of provincial training and the issue of the own campus. That's one of the issues we're looking at, because if the strategic framework that we are proposing turns out to be approved, then it would have huge implications for our location, and we would have to then enter that space of how best should we be located in view of the new strategic plan that we envisage. At the same time, it is correct that we will have to engage with provincial academies, but also our colleagues at Logola will have to engage with them, so that as we move forward, we can be able to agree on at least a mechanism that allows us to integrate or coordinate public service training better than is currently the case.
Okay.
Sorry, ma'am. With your permission, can I just clarify the figures?
Yeah.
The current personal expenditure for 2010-2011 for the public service. Now remember, public service excludes local government. It's 270 billion, plus the additional 6.5 billion in terms of the current salary off on the table. So it's 276.5 billion for this year. Now the figures Mr. Marsh has put up includes local government.
Yes.
So therefore it comes to the 3 billion rand. And even the figure he talks about in terms of personnel numbers, 1.5,
yes.
It includes local government.
Yes.
Local
yes.
government has about 250,000 employees.
Yes.
So if you add the both, it comes to the 1.5 million. Thanks.
I think then it means, you know, we are, to avoid this thing of forever we go back in work, we understand the fact that work is going to improve. It somehow or the other keeps on coming up that we might then, especially when you're talking of this development of the integrated public service, we might then also have to always put in the back of our minds the where do we put local government on these issues of training, because even now practically it happens that people from local government become trained by like through PCTA and they are moved over to the provincial and the national public services training institutes. So that also then should then be looked at as per saying, in whatever gets developed, especially by the task team of higher education, can there be also a consideration of the long-term plan or involvement of even local government on issues of centralizing the training? Thank you, Chair.
I think that's an important point as well. In the light of where we are, perhaps quite briefly, we have realized also from the input that was done by the Department of Education, in her response that DJ also indicated there was a discussion that perhaps on the task team, Palama should be part of it, we should be considered. I know that higher education also and training will also look into that, but it becomes critical in the light of the unfolding processes. As one aspect. The other issue is, we did have recently a problem of a budget vote that was collapsed into the department, whereby Palama has been a standalone all along. It's an issue that we're consistently interacting with Parliament. Of course, they were also considering it in the light of the independent related institutions, but the Palama issue is separate. Was, you know, it's been existing that way, and with the expectation of where we're looking at human resource, you know, and skills training within the public service as a whole. That matter is still seated with us as a committee, and we think we're going to give it a special focus so that we're able to assist Palama as well from the side of its budgetary processes, the location of the budget, you know, the expansion of the expenditure in the light of the expectation as well as a committee to ensure that it achieves the objectives envisaged by government. Okay, the very issue that Honorable Began raises of the local government inclusion in the whole process of working. As a committee, we do work very closely with service, with local COCTA as a committee. There are programs that we are doing together. For example, the single public service now, we are working as a committee. The study groups and everything else are done quite jointly, and it is important to move along on all other aspects, including this one, and I'm sure that's a critical aspect. I think, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, we did have a fruitful day, also in the light of now there's also a march
it might not be good enough to proceed, but we have actually touched everything else that we wanted to do, and it was quite a fruitful day. It challenges us to other major areas. We are willing to take them forward the same way, and I want to thank everyone who's been here, DG. And thanks so much, and thanks to Palama, thanks to Public Service and Administration and you members, and we can adjourn the committee. Thank you.
That reason for that change, for that going up, because in here, in the case we had temporary employees, which we changed with permanent employees. Yeah.